This is Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. Welcome back. We hear all the time about game-changing, disruptive innovations in healthcare or education. And in fact, we hear about it so much that disruptive innovation as a term has started to lose its meaning. But if you want to know where that term came from, you have to go back 17 years when Clayton Christensen argued that a disruptive innovation totally changes an industry by going around the establishment. Think about the PC. It provided a cheap, widely available alternative to those huge, clunky, room-sized computers of the 1960s. In a new article, Christensen argues that the U.S. is losing its edge and that innovative Americans are being overshadowed by leaders who want to cut jobs. Clay, thanks very much for coming into the studio.
Gosh, Kara, thanks for letting me be here.
So, you know, one of the things that you've been arguing is that there's a decline in innovation platforms. I mean, I think about a place like Bell Labs that brought all these big brains together, and out of Bell Labs came the laser, the transistor, these huge advances in computing.
Yes.
What is happening? Are we losing those places where the big brains come together?
Well, to some degree, we are. And that's why we decided to go after this issue called the capitalist dilemma. Why is it that finance seems to be innovative and generate all the profit that they would like? And why are we having this problem in the real part of the real world that we're not as innovative as we ought to be? All this money, lack of innovation, what's going on? That's what I think is important. Once you define the problem, then how to do it becomes more straightforward.
So has innovation shifted over to finance? I mean, it's certainly true that when you look at automated trading, when you look at the fact that there's a huge influx of people with PhDs in physics and computer science and math into the financial sector, are we to conclude that where the real thinking and where the real cutting-edge stuff is going on is in how do you shave a penny or a fraction of a penny off this or that trade, and not how do you build a DVD player?
Essentially, you're right. Historically, and really until the last couple of years, capital was very costly and scarce.
You're talking money. Okay.
That's right. Finance gave us ways to measure how efficiently we're using capital. Mm-hmm. It turns out that these measures are all ratios, a fraction. It has a numerator and a denominator. One metric that they use is return on capital employed. And the numerator is profit. The denominator is assets. And the neat thing about this is I have two levers to tweak. So sure, I could be more innovative and create more profit and put it on in the numerator. But what the heck? If innovation is just too hard, I can outsource everything and get assets off the balance sheet.
So basically, you can innovate or you can fire people.
That's right.
I mean, they're both solutions to the problem.
That's right. And so I got two options. I could be more innovative, but what the heck, if that's hard, I only invest in innovations that pay off in the short term. Because if you invest in things that pay off in the long run, these metrics go in the wrong direction.
It's interesting. I was talking to a real pioneer in technology recently, and one of the things he said, I said, you know, you're talking about the technology of the future, and you're very excited about it. What's going to get us there? And he's giving me his answers. And then he says, you know, but here's the thing that's standing in our way. Venture capitalists, the people who invest in new technologies, because people tend to, A, want really fast turnaround. So they want to put their money in and a year or two later, they want it out and they want more money. And the other thing he said was they tend to sort of operate in a herd. So whatever is really hot and interesting right now, they're interested in 5 or 10 years down the line. It's hard for them to know what's going to be in and what's going to be hot.
It's exactly the problem. And to be fair to venture capitalists, they're part of a system. So about somewhere 70% of all of the financial assets in the economy are the assets of pension funds. Operating companies have to give money into the pension funds because they're obligated to do that. But if the pension funds can then deploy that in funds like venture capital that pay off a lot very fast, then the corporation, they don't have to put as much money in the pension fund. And so they put pressure on the people who invest the money. I want a real fast return. And as a consequence, they invest in the kinds of things that don't create long-term growth. And it's a circular system, which is why there are not a lot of government policies that can solve the problem. Managers just need to reframe the metrics.
Clayton Christensen, I feel like you're describing a really tough problem, that we've become married to these ways of measuring businesses, but those ways of measuring businesses don't necessarily measure innovation. I mean, what in the world is going to take us out of that if, as you say, laying off people is just as good as developing a new product?
So anybody who says it's easy, they don't understand the problem.
Don't listen.
Yeah. But to some degree, we all are attending the same church, meaning we have the same beliefs, or we never think about what we believe in. We need somebody who is the modern Martin Luther, who will just go up to the door and knock on, these are principles that we got to follow or we're doomed. So the first thing is, actually, God did not tell us to measure efficiency of capital by internal rate of return or RONA.
It's not in the Bible, as far as we know.
That's right. And we're all inside of this church, but the door is not locked. So just come out, executives, and announce, we're not going to measure success by these metrics.
Is the Martin Luther who changes this the big deal CEO who says, I am not going to abide by the way we normally do things here in the business world?
Well, I guess it would have more news associated with it. But actually, any company who wants to be innovative, they just have to announce this. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, we have to measure or look for non-consumption in our market, because that gives us a metric of where growth will come from in the future. Can I just give you a silly example, which is not a silly example? One of my students, really understood this, and she realized there is enormous amounts of non-consumption of art. So think about this. The last time you rented an apartment or bought a home, and you go past this wall and there's nothing on it. And so you say, oh, I will consume art. And you go get a print or something and stick it there. And for about 3 weeks, you consume art. And then it's just so everyday-ish that you don't even notice anymore that you have a piece of art. You stop consuming art. And then she said, oh my gosh, there's a technology that is high-definition, flat-screen TVs. And so she's starting a company where she gets very thin screens, very high resolution, and puts a lovely frame on it, and you stick it on the wall.
And every once in a while, it changes.
That's right. And you can decide what you want. If you got friends, you can give this ambiance to the, And the opportunity to consume art is a huge market. If people begin buying the product like we think, then it will drive the price down to the point that even more people will say, geez, I could consume art on a regular basis. If rich people have access to it and everyday people don't, there is non-consumption. And that's the market we got to target.
Now, I would guess that if you could get a bunch of CEOs in this room and ask them whether they are in fact creating a culture of innovation, to the last person, they would say, no question about it, we are. Are there companies that you would point to that you'd say, okay, they maybe have stepped away from the sort of Wall Street, every quarter we have to deliver on earnings, and they've said, you know what? We're not in it for the short term. We're in it for the long term. Has anybody broke? I mean, you talked about a Martin Luther. That's pretty serious breaking from the faith or breaking from the orthodoxy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sure there are. I worry about those who aren't more than those who are. And those who are, haven't gone through the maturity of that more established companies have gone through when we say they're not. So Amazon is an extraordinarily creative business, you know, and they think about these things in the right way. And everybody knows that they don't measure their return on capital employed. They measure success in other ways. But most of them are stuck. And on every one of their income statements, there's a line in there that says research and development, and there's a number there. And you peel the cover off of that number, what you're going to see inside is most of it is targeted at what we call efficiency innovations, and able to do more with less. By their very nature, they eliminate jobs. And then there's another part of that number that we call sustaining innovations, which is to make good products better for people who already have the product. And that never creates jobs either. Because if I convince you, if I'm Toyota and I convince you to buy the hybrid Prius, you don't buy a Camry.
Right.
And sustaining innovations are replacative in character, and therefore they don't create real growth. And so the company adds up all of these things, sew the cover tight, and they publish it as a number. And the executives can say, oh, we're investing in innovation. But what they need to invest in, they're actually not.
Yeah, they're not thinking about the big ideas.
That's right. And they could.
You wrote in the New York Times that 25 years ago, it took us about a year to recover from a recession. And now it takes us 5 years to claw our way back. Is that because we've become less creative, so we just sort of can't pull ourselves up by our bootstraps anymore?
That's right. So I would say it's not that we're not creative, but the system, and in particular, the way we measure success, has actually broken the system, causing us to do exactly what we don't want to do, which is to invest more and more of our energy in creating more and more free cash flow. And then financial firms just focus on free cash flow, and then more free cash flow, and then more free cash flow. So now in America, amongst publicly traded companies in aggregate, there is $1.5 trillion of capital on the balance sheet of public companies. The cost of capital is very close to zero, and they can't invest. And if you're interested in where America is headed, just look at Japan. Because there was a time in the 60s, 70s, and 80s when Japan was growing at unprecedented rates. What was the engine of Japan's transformation from poverty to prosperity? It was market-creating innovations competing against non-consumption. So Toyota didn't attack the world with a Lexus. They came in with a Corona that was so affordable that the low end of humanity, we call college students today, they could have a car. And Honda didn't go after a Harley Davidson. They came in with a bicycle that had a little motor on it, that my mother could have a motorcycle now. And then Sony had transistor radios that cost $2 instead of $25 from RCA. And Canon gave us printers on our desk. And billions of people now could own things and use things that previously were beyond their reach. And as more people bought, then these companies in Japan had to hire more people to make them and distribute them and sell them and service them. But in the early 1990s, they too, their big corporations, began to measure success with these metrics. And since 1990, Japan has generated only one market-creating innovation, which is the Nintendo Wii.
Wow. But
it's the only one we can see. And so they continue to invest, but they invest to become even more efficient. They have capital everywhere. and the cost of capital is zero, and they can't invest. And they've been in this quandary for 20 years. That's where America has headed. Europe is also there. You know, the Germans just announced that they're going to make the cost of interest negative in the hope that making capital even cheaper will initiate somebody to use the capital to start.
They're going to make it negative. They're going to pay you to borrow their money. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. That's right.
That's interesting.
But that's not why we're not investing. You know, it's the metrics. So we need to solve the problem.
Clayton Christensen is a professor at Harvard Business School, author of The Innovator's Dilemma and The Capitalist Dilemma. Thank you so much for this great conversation.
Thanks for letting me be here.
Up next, a guy who was pretty much broke by the time he was 40, but ended up designing one of New York City's main attractions. From PRI and WGBH Radio, I'm Kara Miller, and this is Innovation Hub. Head to iTunes and SoundCloud to hear all our stories again, or for the first time. We'll be right back.